Downey.
Hi, everybody. My name is Rocky, and I'm an alcoholic. I want to thank Damien for inviting me out here. It's a pleasure to do anything for Alcoholics Anonymous. Having said that, whether it's in my home group, whether it's out of town, you know, whether it's at a convention, anything, anytime anybody asks me to do anything for Alcoholics Anonymous, I have an alcoholic head, so I think to myself real quick, do they know who they're asking? Are they sure they got the right guy? You know what I mean? But luckily I've been trained, and I always say yes, and I do it running, and I do it with a smile on my face. Like I said, I'm glad to be here. For an alcoholic like me, I take pleasure in the simple things. I got to go to my sponsor's house about 4 o'clock today. A few of my friends were there, and we jumped in the car, and we were driving down the 5, and perfect timing. The sun was setting, the sky was pink and orange. You could see the water. My sponsor had put on a speaker CD, and so you can blame him if I'm all emotional, because I'm already crying on the way up here, you know what I mean? My eyes are all teary, and I'm like, oh man, it's going to be an emo night, I tell you. So I don't know what you guys are going to get tonight, but I hope you enjoy the ride, man. Okay, let me catch my breath here. So you guys have a beautiful group here. You guys have a welcoming group. I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I was sitting here, sitting next to my friend, and I just take a deep breath, and I got that feeling, and I leaned over to him, and I said, you feel that? He said, what? I said, there's God in the room. You know what I mean? And I hope you feel God in the room tonight, because I sure as hell do. Like I said, you guys are a great group. You train your people well. Alcoholics Anonymous is alive and well in this group. And Joe, who just read the traditions, I'm standing out there, and he's got 15 months. You got 15 months, bud. And let me tell you, at 15 months, I don't know if I could put a complete paragraph or sentence together. You know, but this guy, he had the nerve and he had the train feet. He walked up to me and he introduced himself, and he said the magic word to me, and it's my magic word. He talked about desperation. You know, and every time I hear that word, it sends chills to my bones. I'm talking to all you guys tonight, but the ones that I really, 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 really want to talk to is all those people who stood up as new. And I think of new and I think of desperation. It's a funny thing to say, but I wish upon you the utmost desperation. You know, I get choked up even saying it. I wish you, not the desperation of a man thirsty, kind of like I am right now, but the desperation of a man and a woman that only an alcoholic man and woman can feel. And most of you know what I'm talking about. You know, that undescribable desperation, that empty, empty hole to where you just got nothing left. Nothing left. I wish that upon you. And if you have that, I'm excited for you. I really do. I'm excited for you. And if you're new and you're here and you're excited, well, then I'm kind of scared of you. You know what I mean? That scares me because I don't understand it. I didn't come in that way. So here we go. Let me give you a little bit of history, who I am, where I'm from, and where I come from. My parents, let's talk about them. And anything I tell you, I give you my word. I'm not telling you because I want your sympathy or your pity. I'm telling you because it's my story, you know. And before I get into it, I'm a happy man today. I'm a very, very happy man. I'm happy to be alive. I'm happy to be standing here. And I have way more than I deserve. Okay, so my father, he's a big, tall, thick, corn-fed Okie from Oklahoma, blue-eyed, Vietnam vet, you know, talks like this, calls me Bubba. Hey, Bubba. Still to this day, he lives in California now, and still to this day, he calls me up and says, hey, Bubba, what you doing? And, you know, today we have a great relationship, and I love him, but it wasn't always so. You know, like I said, he's a Vietnam vet, but he grew up in Oklahoma, and at the age of 16, his father, my grandfather, horrible alcoholic. I mean, my whole family, you know, they say it skips generations. I don't think it's ever skipped a generation. My whole family, from as far as we can track back, are severe, severe alcoholics. And my grandfather was a very, very bad. He just suffered from alcoholism, like we all do. And when my father was 16 years old, my grandfather had come home while my dad was at school, and drunk, and he had beat my grandmother to within 2 inches of her life. He grabbed his shotgun. He drove himself to the nearest train tracks and blew his head off and let the train hit the car. And you know, my father, I can't imagine what that feels like. I can't imagine being in that, you know, that kind of life. I don't know. I just don't know. I know it sounds horrible, but, you know, I can't imagine that would be good. Back in that day, the Vietnam War was going on, so my crazy Okie father, everybody was getting drafted. He decided to just volunteer. You know, he didn't want to be in high school anymore, and he didn't want to be at home, and he didn't want to be in Oklahoma, which I can't blame him. So I've lived there. I just might volunteer, you know, myself. So he went off to Vietnam. And there he learned how to drink like a real man, like a real alcoholic, and he learned to use other substances. And let's get to my mother. My mother's a full-blooded Navajo Indian. She was born and raised on the Kenta Reservation about 30 miles east of Tuba City. Her family also, my grandfather and grandmother on that side, were severely, severely, severely affected alcoholics. And they treated her very bad. So bad. I mean, I guess we don't got to get into details. They would lock her in closets, smother her like that. You know, she was sexually abused. And so bad that at the age of 15, the state and the court saw fit that she was emancipated. And for some reason, she decided to go to cosmetology school out in Oklahoma. So I guess you can see how hick white boy and Navajo Indian met. You know, my father came back from Vietnam, and they got together, and off it went. And somewhere down the line, this half breed was born. And I heard somebody come up here, and was it our 10-minute speaker? Yes. Thank you for sharing. I love hearing stories. They save my lives. I might have a couple. Who knows? He said something. He said that he had some innocence when he was a kid. I don't ever remember having that. I like the diversity in here. You know, there's, you know, the highway is broad and our stories differ, but the solution is the same. Anyways, as far back as I can remember, I didn't feel all right and I was not innocent. I was a little kid and pardon my language, but shit just wasn't right. My parents were very violent. Very abusive. There was guns and there was police and there was all kinds of things like that, you know. And I just say that because that's my story. But at the same time, I can sit here with a straight face and tell you my parents loved me very much. I had a lot of love, you know. They did the best that they could with what they had. They didn't know any better. They were untreated, man. And I remember it was 1985. Believe it or not, I was 5 years old. I'm 33 years old today, but I was 5 years old. I don't know a lot of people that can remember things from 5 years old, but you know, I can barely remember anybody's name, but I can remember when I'm 5 years old. That's crazy. I was 5 years old, and I was walking, holding my dad's hand. We were in Texarkana, Texas, walking to New Life Christian Center. And how a five-year-old realizes this, I don't know, but I remember not feeling right. I remember looking at the church, looking at my dad, looking at my mom, looking at my baby sister and going, why do I feel like this? Something's not right. And I told myself in my head, I'm going to remember this date. And I don't remember the date, but I remember it was 1985. And I'm here to tell you, I was right. I was 5 years old. I couldn't articulate what was going on. I probably could barely even talk right, but something was wrong and I knew it. I just didn't feel right. Sometime later, my suspicions would be confirmed early on. In my story, I never went to school until I was in sixth grade. Sixth grade is my first year of school, and I tell people that because it's the truth. But if we want to get even deeper than that, I did go to school. I went to school kindergarten and first grade. And in first grade, I'm going to tell you a little story about myself. In first grade, there was this girl named Jessica. She used to come to me every day. Every day she'd come with a new dress on. She'd be like, "Hi, Rocky. You like my dress?" And I'd be like, "Yeah, nice dress, nice dress." And I was playing it cool, you know what I mean? "Yeah, that's a nice dress." I loved her dresses, people, and I loved her. All right? I loved Jessica. So I'd keep it cool with her, but I'd go home every day, and I couldn't wait to tell my mom what color dress Jessica had on and all about Jessica today. And it was a parent-teacher conference or something like that. And my mom asked the teacher, "You got to show me where Jessica sits. You got to show me a picture of Jessica." And the teacher told my mom, "We don't have a Jessica in this class. As a matter of fact, we don't have a Jessica that I know of, actually." And then my mom thought she was kidding. And still to this day, I don't know if she was imaginary or what, man. I don't know if I was crazy, but I swear she was real. I swear, I know what she looked like. The last dress I saw her in was blue. I'm glad I can laugh about it now. My mom got me home, and she thought something was wrong with me. She started calling me all kinds of names, telling me I was a liar, telling me I was a weirdo. You know, and in first grade, my own mom just confirmed my own suspicion. Something's wrong with me. What's wrong with me? Because I swear Jessica was real. But you know what? My mom is right. Something is wrong with me. And that was a feeling I was to take with me everywhere I went, every second I was awake, until I got here, and sometime after being here. So life went on like that. People ask me today where I'm from, where I grew up, and I get to, you know, I can tell 200 different people a different place, and I wouldn't be lying. I moved Oklahoma, Nebraska, Kansas, California, and everywhere in between. I never lived anywhere longer than a year until I moved to California. It's just the way it was with my family. Sometimes it was because the law, sometimes it was because jobs, money. We had to go here to get that, and we had to go over there to get that other thing. Whatever it was, we just went. You know, and I guess that worked out, and I guess that was another reason why I never went to school. My mom considered that she homeschooled me, but the truth was is my parents both went to work every day, and me and my baby sister stayed home. As little kids, we stayed home. We run amok. You know, it was kind of cool. Yeah. I got to tell you, the one time my little sister, she got mad at me, and I was laying on the ground, and she stepped on my arm and snapped that sucker. Yeah, I think she owes me an amends. I ought to tell her that, too. Anyways, and life just went on like that for me, guys. You know, it was very painful. It was, but it was life. You know, I really wasn't able to articulate that it was a bad life until I got here. Like I said, I always knew that something was wrong. 1989, I moved to Whittier, California. I don't know if you guys have ever heard that, but let me tell you, it's a lot different from Arizona, Oklahoma, Texas, Nebraska, places like that. It's a lot different. It was kind of what I was looking for. I go to sixth grade, my first year of school really ever. And I have no social skills, people. I have no social skills. I've been locked in a room with my sister my whole life being homeschooled, okay? Like, I've met some homeschooled people recently. I'm like, they're weirdos, you know what I mean? Like, I was one of those, yes. Anyways, I go to a public school. I was nervous. I was scared. I didn't know what to expect. And I go there, and I'm this brown kid, and there's a lot of brown people there too, but there's whites and blacks and Asians. I mean, it's just a smorgasbord of people. And, you know, I didn't fit in nowhere. At least that's the way I felt. Once again, I didn't fit in nowhere. I tried to make friends. I'd do anything to be loved. I mean, if I had money in my pocket, I'd buy you candy. You know what I mean? I'll give you my lunch. I remember that my first year of school, this is my experience. My first year of school, I think it was within the first half year. And you guys know what cholos are, right? Well, I learned in sixth grade what a cholo was. I didn't know what a cholo was until then. Sounds like some kind of food. But, yeah, there was this really, really pretty girl named Yvette Garcia. And I didn't know how to talk to girls or anything like that. And she was cold. And I had a jacket. And she asked me if she could borrow my jacket. Am I going to say no? Absolutely not. You can have my jacket. You know what I mean? You want my shirt, too? I'll give you my shoes. My shoes fit. You know? Yeah. Seriously, so I give her my jacket. And I don't know nothing about it. You know, I don't know how things work. I don't know if she's got a boyfriend or not. I'm not going to ask her or anything. I could barely just say, yeah, here's my jacket. You know what I mean? I was playing four square. You know what that is? You're playing with your ball, four square, hitting that ball. And this little cholo comes up to me and says, hey, man, let me talk to you, eh? Puts his arm around me, and I'm like, all right, cool. And he starts walking me out to the field. And we're in sixth grade. We're little kids. This kid walks me all the way back to the very back of the field with his two little thugs with him, and he pulls a gun out on me. Dude, I've seen lots of guns. My dad pulls a gun out on my mom and vice versa all the time. But to have one pulled on me, and he's my age, I froze. I couldn't believe it. You know what? I don't know why I didn't start crying. I should have. You know what I mean? I should have started crying. And he told me never to talk to his girlfriend, don't look at his girlfriend, this and that, blah, 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 blah. Once again, just confirm my suspicions. Something is wrong with me. I'm trying to be nice. I'm trying to make friends. And you pull a gun out on me? Hell no. I'm crazy. Something's wrong with me. Anyways, I get through that year of school. Next year comes, my mom and my dad have divorced by now. Finally, thank God. You know, a lot of people, they say that their parents getting divorced was a tragedy in their life. Not for mine, man. Me and my sister threw a party when they divorced. Thank God. It was an amazing thing. My mother had met this wonderful man. He was a businessman. He graduated UCLA. I'm not going to get into much about him, but he was the most wonderful man that I've ever met. He met my mom, and real quick, he took me and my sister in like we were his own. He was very handsome, very tall, stood up straight, looked at me in the eye. He just talked to me like he was my dad. And he moved us. We stayed in Whittier, but he moved us to a house, a real house, right across the street from a private school. And he told us he was going to put us in private school. Sweet. I hope they don't have cholos. You know what I mean? I hope they have metal detectors there, man. My mom tells me, it's the summer now, mind you. My mom tells me, and I'm in Southern California now, and you guys have beautiful, beautiful summers out here. I have since become a SoCal boy to the bone. And it's summer, and I want to ride my bike and do all the kinds of things that a sixth grader wants to do. And she tells me I got to go. She has to go to work, but I got to go across the street to the school and take this assessment test. But it doesn't really matter, she says. It doesn't really matter. Just go there, get it done, you'll do great, blah, blah, blah. Fine. I go there, and I'm thinking, I want to get out of here. And she said it doesn't really matter. They lay that thing down in front of me, tell me, fill in the dots with the right answer. Teacher leaves, I'm like, brrr. Fill that sucker out quick. I'm like, yeah, back to my bike. That night, my mom gets home, and she's furious. She is furious. She tells me, you got to go to sixth grade again. You're a retard, blah, 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 the whole thing. Once again, confirms my suspicions. Something is wrong with me. But this time, I was a little pissed at her. I'm like, you told me it didn't matter. You know what I mean? Like, what the hell? What the hell? So I go to sixth grade again. The next year, seventh grade, I'm just telling this story real quick. My teacher's name was Miss Miracle. I came home and I'm like, Mom, my new teacher's name is Miss Miracle. My mom looks at me and goes, good, it'll take a miracle to teach you. That's pretty funny. That was funny. You know, and every year since then, I got in trouble. I got suspended from school for this or that. The first time I ever got suspended, I took some firecrackers to that school because I heard that an eighth grade boy wanted some firecrackers, and I had some. I was a little firebug. I'm from Oklahoma, you know what I mean? We light off firecrackers over there. And I wanted to give him some because I wanted him to like me. So I gave him some, and he lit them off in the bathroom like a retard. And you know what I mean? And blamed me for it. And that just set it off. Every year after that, since every year I was in school, I got suspended. Anyways, life goes on. High school. Let me tell you, along the line somewhere, my mom had become a teacher at Whittier High School. Now I'm going to Whittier High. I could sit here for 2 days and tell you all the craziness that has gone on in between this time, but let me just tell you, by this time, my mom is a teacher at Whittier High. I'm in a few of her classes. She is crazy alcoholic. She likes to smoke crack with that. One of my best friends is her boyfriend. She's dating my best friend. They are officially in a relationship, who's also going to Whittier High. You know. Yes. Oh, she divorced my stepfather. You know what I mean? She had an affair with his best friend. My life is madness. You know what I mean? It's madness. But they say, you know, the alcoholic life is the only normal life. You know, and while you're going through it, it's all right. It's all right. We get through it. We deal with it. There were some good times I was having then, people. I mean, check this out. I graduated high school because I blackmailed my mom's ass into helping me pass, or else I'd tell her that she was dating a high school student. So it worked out. You know what I mean? You know, I'm a survivor, baby. She ended up losing that job. She got caught drinking with a student over the weekend. She got a DUI with alcohol and drugs in the car with a student. That's my mama. You know what I mean? I love her to death. I love to drink and I love to party. You can figure by this time I've made friends. I've learned how to make friends. I smoke weed. I drink. I just do what everybody else does. I got a little job. I graduate high school. It's party time. It's what everybody's doing. And slowly but surely, everybody starts to do their thing. They start to get bigger and better jobs. And I like to drink. I love to drink. Let me tell you, warm vodka. There's nothing better. Yeah. Anyways, my friends are... Okay, I got this set of friends here. I call them my white boys. You know, they're the skater, surfer guys. And then I become friends with these people over here. They're like, I learned how to make friends with the cholos, right? I got to tell you this one time. I go out to a party with my Mexican friends, and these people wanted to beat me up. Everywhere I go, it seems like people want to beat me up. I just want to be friends, you know what I mean? They wanted to beat me up, and I didn't know them very well, but he came up and stuck, this guy named Richard, he came and stuck up for me. And he got the people not to beat me up. Anyways, we leave the party and we go to 7-Eleven. And it just so happens that the guys that wanted to beat me up are parked right next to me. Now, for some people, this would be scary and retarded. I thought it was one of the most amazing things I'd ever seen, and the most amazing act of love ever that two men could have for each other. He gets out of the car and starts yelling at these people, and then he pulls out a gun and shoots their engine. He did it for me! You know what I mean? No one had ever done anything like that for me. And I guess if you could look back now, I probably would have been like, oh, like just looking at him. It was amazing. Friendship. That's what I saw. I saw friendship. This guy loves me, you know what I mean? And the truth is, he did love me. He was actually one in the end who helped me get in recovery. Anyways, people, I never wanted to be a bad guy. I never wanted to be an alcoholic. I just wanted friends. I just wanted to be happy. I just wanted to be loved. And I just didn't want to feel that. I just didn't want to feel that feeling that I feel inside. By the end, I'm sleeping in a bush. I'm eating out of McDonald's trash cans. I'm stealing from my mother. I'm stealing from you. I'm going in and out of jail. Sorry, I'm getting choked up here. I'm going in and out of jail. All I ever wanted to do was just to be a normal person. Oh, let me tell you, I'm in jail, right? It's just another example of how I'm not normal. I'm in jail. I'm over in Wayside. You guys ever heard of Wayside? I'm in Wayside County Jail. I'm doing a year out there. And when you go in there, they put the whites this way, they put the Mexicans this way, the blacks this way, the black or the you get it. Anyways, they put me right through with the Mexicans. I'm not going to say nothing. I ain't never been there. You know what I mean? I'm just going to do my time, do whatever. And I'm in there probably a couple months, and I'm sitting there, and one of the guys are talking to me, and he's like, "Hey, man, you don't talk like a Chicano, eh?" I'm like, "That's because I'm not." You know what I mean? That was the wrong thing to say. Seriously, that was not the right thing to say. And he goes, "What do you mean you're not Chicano?" I said, "No, I'm half." And I said it proud. I'm half white, half Native American. Oh my Lord! I can't sit here and tell you all the politics in jail, but man, I caused a shitstorm in there. You know what I mean? I got the guy in charge of the whites talking to the guy in charge of the Mexicans. They want me to trade. They call it cars. They want me to trade cars. And I'm like, I'm not trading nothing. You know what I mean? Can you just leave me alone? And they got boobop and blue wall in 13 seconds here. And I'm spinning like, oh my God, what did I do? What did I do? Anyways, I remember I was in jail. And I wrote this letter to my mother. And it was the most honest, most sincere letter it was the most honest I had been in a long, long time. And I let her know that I was done doing what I was going to do, you know, done doing the alcoholic thing, done doing drugs. I was going to straighten my life up. I was going to straighten my life up. I truly, truly, truly believed it. I had been sober a couple months now, and I had way more time to do in there. And I believed it with all my heart. You could put me to a lie detector test, and I would have passed with flying colors. I was going to be sober. I was done with that life, people. Just spending sober time in jail was better than what I was doing, you know, was better. I was done. Finally, I did 2 days less than a year. It was the longest I've ever done. I'm not a hardened criminal, people. I'm not a badass. But I get out of jail. I'm taking the bus from downtown LA back to Whittier, and I'm ready to go. I'm ready for my new life. I'm ready for my new life. I call my mom from the payphone. She's excited. I'm going to do it. I'm going to go see my mom. Maybe she'll let me stay at her house. I'm going to get a job. I'm going to get a job. I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it. My mom meets me at the bus stop. She is so happy to see me, and I'm so happy to see her. I get in her car. She hugs and she kisses me, which is very rare for her. She hugs and she kisses me. And this is alcoholism, people. We don't know any better, especially untreated. She pulls out her hand and opens it to me, and there's a handful of Vicodin. And she goes, "I knew these would help you. I knew." She said, "Here, happy release day or whatever." Mind you, I'm not going to do it anymore. With all my conviction that I have, all the resolve in the world, I'm not going to do it anymore. Boom. There it is. Swallow those suckers right up. You know why? Because if you felt like I did inside, you'd do it too. Nothing in the world that I have ever tried before Alcoholics Anonymous can truly get that feeling to go away. Nothing. And trust me, people, I have tried. I have tried church. I have tried friends and family and loved ones. I have tried everything. I have tried everything that I can think of. And when it comes down to it, I don't care about morals. I don't care about family. I don't care about my nephew. I don't care about my mom. I don't care about the preacher. I don't care about the old lady walking across the street. I don't care about nothing. I don't care about it because I can't. Because those things get in the way of my alcohol. And my alcohol is the only thing that gives me that synthetic peace inside. And I have to have that peace, because without that peace, something's going to happen. Either I'm going to die, I'm going to kill you, or I'm going to go completely insane. I can't take it. And I know you guys know what I'm talking about. That place, you, if you felt like I did, you would drink too. No doubt about it. And I will do anything. As long as there's a breath in me, as long as I can still think a little bit, I'm going for it. I'm getting that warm vodka. Or I'm going to get that $5 or $2 or whatever I have to get, because I got to get that alcohol. It's the only way I can survive. Some people, they drank to escape. I drank so I could just be a part of life. I didn't want to escape nothing. I just wanted to feel a part of. I could not function. In the end, I was severely, severely physically addicted to alcohol. If I didn't drink every few hours, I would get sick. Some of you know how that is. It's one of the worst things I have ever experienced in my life. I don't wish that on my worst enemy. It's horrible. And, you know, at least today, I won't have to feel that. You know, I don't know about tomorrow, but today, I won't have to feel that feeling. In the end, people, I got to tell you a story. All the drugs and alcohol and vodka in the world wasn't doing it for me, and I didn't know what to do. I guess the book calls it that jumping off place. I couldn't live with alcohol. I couldn't live with drugs, and I couldn't live without it. I didn't know what to do. I didn't know what to do. And I'm sure a lot of you have been there, so I decided to kill myself. And not one of those cry for help, look at me, kill myself. Like, this was a secret. I'm planning this sucker. You know what I mean? And it was strange. The second I truly, truly, truly decided that I was going to kill myself, it was like taking that drink of alcohol. I said, it's going to be over. It's going to be over. And I got a true moment of peace. Still to this day, I can look you in the face and say, I got a true moment of happiness. It scares me to think of that, but I was happy because I knew it was going to be over soon. So I had a plan, though. I needed a week. I needed a week to get what I needed to get. I was going to write the letters to all the people that I loved. I was going to go see them one last time. Of course, I wasn't going to tell them what I was going to do. And I saved up my money, and I got what I had to get. And I know this is an AA meeting, but my alcohol disguised itself as drugs sometimes. And I got a huge bottle of Vicodin. I got about 10 bottles of methadone, 180 milligrams apiece, and I got an 8-ball of cocaine. Yes. Now, if you think about it, I wasn't really, my brain wasn't in the best place. To kind of foreshadow what happened, those drugs kind of counteract each other. I'd have been good just taking one, you know, either or. I wrote the letters, and I stuffed them under the door, locked my door. I took them all. And the next thing I remember is, I don't mean to be vulgar, you know, guys know what a catheter is? The next thing I remember being in my room, crying, you know, sobbing that, because you know it's over. I mean, I'm happy, but I'm like, life's over. Crying like a baby. And the next thing I remember, I'm strapped down, and there's these nurses, and I'm pretty sure they were pretty, and they're giving me a catheter, and I just go, because if you ever had a catheter, or you can just imagine, that'll wake you up. Oh boy, that'll wake you up out of an overdose. And I remember hearing, I don't know if she said it to me or she was saying it to her partner, that's what he gets for trying to kill himself. You know what I mean? She didn't feel bad for me. That's what she gets for trying to kill himself. I wish I could say that things like that, that demoralization was enough to make me stop drinking. Because I'm still alive. And as long as I'm alive, I'm going to be an alcoholic and I'm going to have that feeling inside. There's nothing, like I said, there's nothing that can take that away. My time's all messed up. I can't tell you if it was 2 weeks later or a year later. But there was a real big significant thing that happened in my life that just sent me off the deep end after that. I decided that killing myself wasn't going to work. You know, I'm too chicken to try that again. That was a big ordeal. And I'm dramatic. I'm a drama queen. So, you know, that was it for that. You know what I mean? I'll just be reckless. And I go back to trying to be a big shot in my city selling drugs and all that stuff. Well, There was this new guy around town, and he wasn't supposed to be selling in my city. And I asked the powers that be for permission, and me and a couple other friends, we went and roughed him up real good, real bad. And the one friend that I had left in my life that was still good, a couple of days after we roughed that other guy up, we were standing in front of my friend's house, and my friend's standing on his driveway talking to me, going, Rocky, when are you going to stop this, man? When are you going to stop? And here comes that guy driving down the street. He found me. And I froze when I seen him. And I'm just watching him drive up, and he puts a hand with a gun out the window, and he starts shooting. And I froze. I couldn't think to duck or run or hide or nothing. And the next thing I know is my friend's brains are all over my face. And I'm standing there looking at him, and I don't feel scared or sad or not. I feel nothing. Let me tell you, people, that sent me off. That sent me off. I couldn't tell you exactly how bad I got. It's all kind of a blur. I just went nuts. Like I said, garbage cans, trash cans, this and that. I got to tell you a real quick story. I only got a few minutes, and I got to make sure to tell you guys this. I'm sleeping in a shed in Whittier. I am out of ideas. I am out of drugs. I am out of friends. I'm out of people that care about me because they're dead because of me. I have the guilt of my friend's death on my hands. I got people after me, you know, and I'm just a guy wanting to have fun and want you to love me, and I'm just this horrible shell of a man now. And I'm sleeping in the shed, and I wake up to this door slamming down because the door wasn't on the hinges. It was an abandoned house. It wasn't abandoned. It was for sale, but the shed felt like it was abandoned. The door falls, and it's this beautiful lady standing there, this beautiful blonde, clean lady. And I scare her, and she jumps up, and she scares me, and she says, "Are you sleeping in here?" And I'm like, wiping my eyes. I'm like, "Duh, yes." She said, "Are you homeless?" I'm like, another, you know, smart question. You know what I mean? Yes. You know, look at me. I'm filthy. And she says, "Follow me." And by this time, you know, I don't follow people when they ask me, especially clean, nice people. They're going to call the cops. I was so done. I follow her to her front yard, and she says, "Wait here." And she goes in her house, and then boom. These two little kids run out, whew, little kids, laughing and playing. I'm telling you, people, at this time, I don't know who's president. I don't know what month it is. I don't know what year it is. I don't know nothing like that. And these kids, the light shining off of them, I can only describe it as God now. This light shining off of them almost blinded me. And then she comes out and she hands me a sandwich and some chips and a banana and says, "Are you hungry?" And I said, "Yes, ma'am, I'm hungry." Still to this day, I don't know what kind of sandwich it was, but it was the best damn sandwich I ever had in my life. And she stands there and she's talking to me. And finally, I'm done and she says, "Well, son, I wish you the best of luck. But you can't go back in that shed now. It's time for you to go. And you can never come back here." That may not sound like nothing to you guys, but I had gotten a glimpse of God again. Something inside me had shifted. And I did what any good, real, true dirtbag alcoholic would do. I ran. I ran from that. I can't feel that. I don't want to feel that. I don't want to know that. I got as high and as drunk and as much warm vodka as I could. And I went. I got arrested twice in 36 hours those next 2 days. Because I was going for it. And nothing I did. Like I said, something had shifted. I couldn't hide it anymore. My sister had been doing this recovery thing in Downey, and she's the only number that I could remember. I panhandled 50 cents. Once I got out of jail, I panhandled 50 cents and called her on my payphone, and thank God she answered the phone. And I asked her that question that I had asked her, or I told her something I told her 100 million times before. I said, "I need help." She said, "Do you have a pen? Can you write this down any way you can?" I said, "I can do that. Hold on. Come to Downey. Come to this address. If you come here, you get your butt here, I'll help you." I walked there, people, from Whittier. It's not too far, but it ain't too close. I got there. I detoxed on her couch for 2 weeks. It seems like a blur. She took me. It was Thursday. It was a Thursday, 2 weeks later. I'm barely coming to. Still feeling sick. She didn't have to lie to me. I was happy to be anywhere, but she said, "Let's go out. I want to take you out for dinner. First, you got to wash your clothes." I only had one pair of clothes, and they were dirty. We get in the car, we go, and we pull up to this women's club in Downey. It's not a restaurant. I'm crazy out of my mind, but I know this shit ain't a restaurant. A bunch of people standing outside drinking coffee, smoking cigarettes. The truth is, I was happy to be anywhere, but I was still out of my mind. We walked into a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, Thursday night Downey speaker meeting. Some guy named Clancy was speaking there. Now, I'm going to tell you the truth. I don't remember shit he said. What I do remember is walking into that place. I am dirty. I am stinky. Inside is dirty and stinky. You know what I mean? Inside, I was completely filthy outside, but inside. But I was happy to be somewhere with a roof over my head. You guys came up to me. You looked at me dead in the eye. No one's looked at me in the eye in a long time. And I'm not talking about, hey, how you doing? I mean, you looked right at me. You looked right inside me and said, hi, I'm so-and-so. Welcome. I'm glad you're here. Now, I don't know if any of you good people are like this, but I'm a bullshit artist. I'm a professional liar. You guys wouldn't know nothing about that, right? I'm a professional liar, people, and one thing that comes along with being a professional liar is I can tell when you're lying to me. And you guys are serious. It shifted me. I didn't have some magical experience. God didn't come down there and strike me sober. I don't remember what Clancy said. Some old man talking about a spring. That's all I remember. I remember you people. The handshake. The Joes. I remember that. And it was just enough. It was just enough for me to think in my crazy, crazy alcoholic mind, maybe I'll go to another one of these. Maybe I'll go to another one. I did. And you know what? You did the same thing the next time. And the next time. And you know what? Since that time to now, you know, newcomer, close your ears if you've heard this enough. My life has become amazing. Amazing. I have clean clothes. I live on my own. I have a job. My family loves me. And more important, I love them. I'm here to tell the newcomer or someone who just needs to hear it. We don't band together. We haven't banded here together to try to trick you into something. You know what I mean? Get you here for a while and say, hey, now you got to sell our book. This isn't a Ponzi scheme. You know, this isn't a pyramid scheme. You know what I mean? It's not what this is. We truly, truly, truly just want you to stop drinking and have a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful life. It's through those steps. I'm here to tell you. A lot of people will tell you a lot of different ways, but it's in that book in black and white. It's all written down. People can add their own little recipes here and there. Let me tell you, I do it the way the book says to do it. And that's the way it works for me. If you're a bullshit artist like me, then you can tell the next thing I say is true or not. It's true for me. Alcoholics Anonymous is the best thing that has ever happened in my life. I have seen with my own eyes. I'm not here telling you about a story that I heard somebody else tell me through somebody else. I've seen it with my own eyes, people. I have watched it happen. I have seen it fix the unfixable. I have seen it break the unbreakable. I have seen God come down and do things that are completely impossible in my life, in your life, in so many different lives. I have seen it with my own eyes. It's undeniable. In my life, I've been searching for the it, for something real. All I want is something real. I don't care what it is. Just give me something real. If I would have had it my way, Alcoholics Anonymous wouldn't have been it. But what the hell do I know? Alcoholics Anonymous is absolutely the best thing that has ever happened in my life. And if you're new, please, just sit here. Just sit here as long as you can and try to figure out why I keep coming back. Thank you for letting me share.